This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the September 23rd edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you alongside the usual crew, but with a special edition. We have, from the New York offices of Daily Racing Form, Mike Hogan.
I'm not the special edition. Come on, Pete. You're burying the lead.
We have, from Texas, Jonathan Kinchin.
Hola, buenos dias.
And we have that special edition that I was referring to, coming to us from, I'm guessing, the side of a turf course somewhere in the USA. He's the assistant trainer to his father. These guys have been having a terrific run last weekend of particular excitement. Also, the birthday boy, belated birthday boy, Norm Cassie. Norm, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm here at Saratoga. It's a pretty nice day out. We actually just worked Pretty City Dancer for the Alcibiades at Kingwood, so it's been a pretty exciting morning here so far.
Oh, that sounds very cool. I want to talk to you about that birthday. Sounds like you had kind of a unique birthday celebration, Norm. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I think maybe typical racetrack fashion. I was by myself, not really at home. I'm here at Saratoga. Louisville's my home where all my family is. And I was just at a bar having a drink, and a random stranger came up to me and goes, "Happy birthday." And I said, "Thank you. How'd you know?" And they said, "Oh, they've been talking about it all day on TVG." I go, "All right, well, that's kind of crazy."
Perhaps
kind of crazy.
Yeah, people love birthday angles. You know, the famous Bill Mott always wins a race on his birthday. Maybe folks were looking to you to see if you were going to have a little bit similar magic over the years. Do you recall having any particular racing successes on your birthday?
Honestly, no, we haven't. You know what day that we always win a race? At Churchill, anyway. At Churchill on Mother's Day, we always win a race.
Good.
My mom
to know.
Shows up, and for some reason, the magic happens, and we can pull something off for my mother. But no birthday magic that I can think of.
That's pretty great. That's good to know. We'll circle the day on the calendar. Everybody's got questions for you. We'll just sort of round table. We're not going to keep you too long this morning because I know you have a lot of other work to do. But Jonathan, why don't you start off? Ask Norm anything you want.
Hey, Norm, a couple of days ago on the show, we talked about Tepin's performance, and I heard you on Bic, and it sounded like you not were worried, but it was, you know, you didn't have her 100% ready to rock and roll. This wasn't the final goal, but she ran unbelievably well. I encouraged everyone to when they see Mr. Masterson, to make sure they give him a hug and tell him thanks for keeping her around in the hopes that we can see her one more year. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more goals to be done this year, but I can't help but get excited about the possibilities of possibly seeing her again. Is there any shot, or should we enjoy it while it lasts?
You know, honestly, there's been a lot different things said about whether or not he's going to keep her, if he's going to breed her herself, if she's going to run again next year. I mean, it's scary to think, but I feel like she's better than she was last year, and she keeps getting better. There's a lot of people were kind of downplaying and saying that she didn't run her flashy race. But, I mean, she ran a par buyer that what she's normally running off a pretty significant layoff. And, you know, there's no reason to believe that she's not as good as she was last year, if not better, and getting better. So I guess we'll just go one race at a time, and we'll see how long this thing goes.
Well, Norm, I think the people, and I'm one of them, the people that think that she maybe didn't run her best race, it's not so much a knock on her, more just like scary about what might be coming next. Because, like you said, it was a bit of a layoff. She was inclined to need the race. Maybe she even did. And I'm of the opinion that she'll be better next out, which is super scary. How'd she come out of the race, and how's she been doing since?
I mean, truthfully, Pete, I think she's doing better than she did going into the race. She's been very happy since she's been back to Saratoga. We've only given her a few days jogging, but she's looking really, really good. She's really sharp. She'll gallop tomorrow. You know what I think people kind of take for granted as far as the way she runs? I think the straight mile and the one-turn mile, she doesn't get to – I think her the exciting thing about her is when she wins and it's over, but it's typically over when she runs the two turn miles where she uses her tactical advantage on the turn and she opens up on everybody. I don't think she gets to use that so much when you have the long stretch at Woodbine or at Belmont or the one, you know, the straight mile at Ascot. So I think when we get her back to the two turn mile at Kingland, we're going to see that, you know, that crazy turn of foot that we've all been accustomed to seeing from her.
That's a great point. People talk about horses for courses, and when you have a special skill like Teppan's ability to quicken, as you're describing, you could see how that would really lend itself to a place like Keeneland. Have you given any more specific thought as to which spot at Keeneland she will be returning in?
I'm still leaning, and, you know, this would be obviously something that Dad and Mr. Masterson discussed. I'm all for a challenge, and we've obviously done things with her that most people wouldn't do. I think we would all agree with that. But at the same time, I hope that we run in the first lady, feeling like it would be a little easier spot. Her big, big races, and then I would say Royal Ascot, the Breeders' Cup last year, maybe even her second race back at Tampa. Her big, big races have always come right after running an easier race. So I'd rather just pick the easiest spot of the two, which I would think at this point is the first lady, and use that as a real springboard to the Breeders' Cup.
You want to jump in, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of things. One of our friends, Mike Maloney, and a friend of the podcast, one of the biggest handicappers in America, said that her race at Keeneland last year leading into the Breeders' Cup mile was the most impressive race he's ever seen run on that turf course. And obviously she loves it there. Have you given any thought to how she's going to handle the extra firm grass out in California? Is that any concern for you, or is that something that you've kind of been excited to get her on something like that and you think she really might appreciate it?
Well, I think it's definitely a question mark. I don't think she will. She ran at Del Mar when she was three, but that wasn't when she was who she is now. And she had different things going against her back then. So if you go back and look at that, I don't think it would be fair to judge her on that. So that being said, she's never really ran on a firm turf course. Obviously, it's a real, real firm turf course anyways. And it's obviously a cause for pause and a little bit of concern. I would have to think she's only going to move forward on that. The way that she moves and the way that she just strides, I just think she is going to accelerate faster over a firm turf course. I know that's kind of scary to think, but that's kind of what I've been reading articles about, you know, the Breeders' Cup mile, and that's kind of what everybody's hoping is that she kind of regresses on the extra firm turf course, and that's their big hope. And I don't know. I'm skeptical of that. I think she's actually going to be better, but I guess that remains to be seen.
Stereotypically, when you're looking at horses' action, that kind of low daisy cutter leg movement that she has does better on firm turf. So I'm in your camp, Norm. I think if they're hoping that's going to be a problem, they may well be barking up the wrong tree. Mike, do you have something else for Norm?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably talk the whole hour-long podcast on just Teppan, but Norm, I know you got things to do and we got other things to cover. So let's move on to another topic. It's getting later in the year. We got some really good two-year-olds. You just mentioned before we started that Pretty City Dancer worked this morning in prep for the Alcibiades. Let's talk about your two-year-olds. Let's talk about her. Let's talk about other ones that you might have in the barn that you're excited about.
I think we're really loaded this year. We have a lot of young, talented horses. Pretty City Dancer worked here at Saratoga and worked her in company with an older horse. She looked really well. I'm excited about the way she's breezing up coming into the race. Really excited about her stretching out the two turns. Then we've got who I call Racing's Bad Boy, her former workmate, Classic Empire, who dropped Irad. I think he was 8-5 in the hopeful. Really thought we were going over, truthfully, guys, to win the hopeful. I really thought we had a big shot, and that obviously happened. We've worked him twice now out of the gate, once here at Saratoga, once at Churchill this morning. with blinkers on, out of the gate. He worked this morning in 113, which at Churchill, if you breathe from the pole in 13, then that would be a huge work. Out of the gate, when they work, you start the clock as soon as the doors open. So for him to work in 13 is incredible. He had an older horse that he was working with. He beat him by 8 lengths. Talked to Julian already this morning, said he felt amazing. So hopefully we've kind of ironed out those kinks with him. We have a 2-year-old by the name of Keep Quiet that ran second and then with anticipation here at Saratoga. That's a turf horse. He works tomorrow with Catch a Glimpse on the grass. I think he's the real deal. So he'll run in the Bourbon at Kingland. We have this filly named Le Coronel that broke her maiden super impressively at Saratoga as well. She's being pointed to the Jessamine. She works this weekend. Who else do we have?
I wanted to ask one about.
Victory to Victory, who just won.
That's who I was going to ask about. Yep. What's the story there? And are all systems go presumably for the Philly Juvenile Turf?
Yes, I mean I haven't looked. She's at our Woodbine division. I know she came out of the race sound. She's happy. I don't think they're going to come back and run her somewhere else off that effort, but don't quote me on that. That's something that Mrs. Weber and Dad would have to discuss.
We'll keep it between us.
Yeah, and everybody who's listening. But anyway, so she's another really talented horse. I thought the horse Conquest Fahrenheit that ran second in the summer, I think he kind of got an overconfident ride. And I think moving forward, he's going to be a very talented horse on the turf. So as far as the 2-year-olds are concerned, we're really kind of got like a stacked deck this year. And, we'll just keep our fingers crossed and hopefully everybody keeps getting better and we'll see what happens.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, buddy. We'll let you get to work and get on with the business of chopping up these public handicapper races for the weekend. But it was great having you on. Great seeing you last weekend. And we wish you continued success.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
We'll be talking soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, boys. Let's move on and talk about some races here. We've got a lot of stuff going on, not only the public handicapper races, but also some extra action from Parks on this Saturday. I don't think I'm going to be able to make it down there, unfortunately, but it looks like a great day of racing, and there should be a good buzz around it. But let's put a pin in that for a moment and move our way on to Laurel Park, specifically Race 6, the Commonwealth Turf Cup. Mike Hogan, have you had a chance to dissect this race and come up with an opinion?
I have. I think probably the horse to beat is our buddy Forrest the Pass, who seems like I pick every time and he never quite wins. So, I just don't know if I can rely on him at a short price. He might be the best horse in the race, but I would still be looking to beat him here. The one that intrigues me is number 3, Mr. Brightside, who I think I made a case for back in April, I believe. He was entered in a stakes race at Laurel. I made the big case for him on the pod that day. He was scratched with a little minor issue and took a couple months off, went back to the work tab in July and has been working regularly since. Came back just a couple weeks ago in the Laurel Dash, which is way, way too short for him. And he ran quite well after breaking slowly, circled wide on his own power and was running late. He now stretches back out to a mile. This is a horse that showed a lot of talent as a 3-year-old. And I like the idea of getting to see what he can do at a nice price as a 4-year-old.
Yeah, I had circled him as a possible long shot as well. I like the second off the long layoff. The last seemed clearly a prep. Also have that angle that I love that paid some dividends at Saratoga this year. The Fair Hill angle, just the way that horses seem to be able to get that extra bit of conditioning that can pay dividends in their races. But one I would definitely want to mention as an A in here, just because I think the trip and setup are going to be terrific, is number 7, Black Type for Christophe Clément, who I think should be able to secure an inside position and has some excellent finishing ability in a race where a lot of the top contenders have to deal with that difficult outside draw. I was just seeing a really good trip for Black Type and wanted to mention Mr. Brightside as a potential long shot. JK, what'd you come up with in here?
Sorry, my computer like was acting crazy, but don't worry, we're having good sound today.
You sound
right?
Great so far. No robot voice. You know the JK robot voice. I'm just waiting for somebody to create a meme about it. But what do you got for us in the Commonwealth Turf Cup?
Well, you know, I try my hardest to make everything work. You know, I'm not going to give up on March. It's just interesting to me that we got a graded stakes winner on the dirt. And Chad found it appropriate to move the horse to the turf. We know what Chad can do on the turf. You got a little bit of the fear of March being overbet with the Chad Brown factor, which I think is something we're all becoming aware of. But there's something about this horse I'm just not really willing to give up on him. And I'm going to look at March a little bit. If he can get forgotten on the outside at a little bit of a price, hopefully he'll drift up or stay at that 5-1 spot. But March, it's March for me here.
Yeah, I mean, Chad Brown turf horse getting forgotten in a graded stakes race?
It doesn't seem likely, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the difficult post. This horse is ahead from being a grade one winner on the turf as well. Very talented. I was just a little concerned about working out the trip from there, but certainly if you're putting it together, any sort of spread tickets or backups, he's one that I'd include. Did you have anything anti-March, Mike, or you were just figuring from a value point of view and trips?
Absolutely. Value point of view. I mean, look at the Hollywood Derby. OK, March was 12-1. Granted, he ran second. Mr. Brightside was 8-1. And, you know, I think we remember that race. Right. That was the infamous race where Jeremy Noseda went on Twitter to complain about the jockey. Sure, he was finished ninth, but he was beaten less than five lengths in a race where he had all kinds of trouble. So much so that a trainer is publicly coming out to complain about the jockey's ride. That's where I at a factor of probably two or three, that's why I'm all for Mr. Brightside.
Fair enough. Let's move on to Parks. The first public handicapper race is the Alphabet Soup, a turf race going a mile and a 16th. We're dealing with PA breds here. Jonathan, we'll let you start off with this one. You have anything clever for us?
I don't know if it's clever, but I'm interested in I'll Call. Normally these are the types of horses that I try to avoid a little bit. Horses that are cutting back from a mile and a half to a mile and a 16th, it feels like a pretty sharp cut back, and it's two different types of races. But this horse was forwardly placed. He kind of ran off a little bit. He was too clear. There's just something about the horse at this price. I think he'll be finishing late. His figures fit. The obvious horses, obviously, are Granny's Kitten and Uncle Dave. But, you know, look, you don't need me to point you in that direction. And if you're looking for a little bit of a price, a forwardly placed horse that could be finishing is one that I'm going to look for. And that's I'll Call for Carlos Martin.
The man loves speed. There's no two ways about it. Mike Hogan, what did you come up with in the Alphabet Soup?
I'm generally with Jonathan here. I mean, I think that the shorter price favorites, and of the two, I really prefer Granny's Kitten. I don't know if I trust the last race from Uncle Dave. I would at a short price, I'd want to see him repeated, especially when there's other pace factors in the race, including Jonathan's I'll Call. The one that's a little interesting to me, though, is Forward Thinker on the outside. If he stays in the race. It's notable that he's getting Javier Castellano for Graham Motion. I mean, this is a somewhat ambitious placing for a horse that was running in a 50 claim or two back, but he's good enough on the turf. And if they keep him in and don't scratch him as part of the entry, he'd intrigue me a little bit.
In Graham, we trust. You can do a lot worse than that on turf races in the Mid-Atlantic or Northeast. That's for sure. Let's move on to the ninth, which is the Grade 3 Gallant Bob. This is the start of the 50-cent pick four. It's also the third of our public handicapper races. Michael, let's keep it with you.
Well, so there's a couple things that I want to say in advance of all these Parks races on the dirt, and it's stuff we've talked about a little bit on the podcast. One is West Coast dirt horses are better than East Coast dirt horses, okay? Generally, simple as that. that's coloring my opinion a little bit. I mean, you name the division, you name a East Coast horse, I'll name a similar West Coast horse that's just better. So, and the other thing I mentioned is Jerry Hollendorfer, I think, is primed for a huge day. We didn't talk about the race prior, which is the Frosted. I really like Cyrus Alexander in there. I really think Who's Out has a huge shot here in the Gallant
Sorry,
Bob.
Mike. Sorry, I just have to interrupt. I'm having a Matt Bernier flashback. We're still talking about Cyrus Alexander on the DRF Players podcast.
I know. Can you believe it? Well, let's talk about the race prior. I'll just say like a minute on this
absolutely.
Race.
Absolutely. I didn't know you'd looked at it or I would have. Yeah. I was going to ask and then I was envisioning, hey, has anybody looked at the eighth? Because I haven't. And I was envisioning getting crickets. And so I just skipped right ahead. But go ahead.
It's named the Frosted after last year's winner, but I think we can subtitle it The Island of Misfit Toys. I mean, it's Cyrus Alexander, Encryption, War Story, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Jordan's a 2-1 favorite, and he hasn't won in 9 races. I mean, Mr. Jordan, in his first 6 races, he finished first 5 of the 6 times, was DQ'd in one of them. Then after that, they throw him into the Haskell. He gets his head ripped off by American Pharoah, and he hasn't won 6 since. So that's your favorite. Cyrus Alexander, he's a goofy horse. I mean, obviously, we've talked about him going back to the Matt Bernier era. But I think he's finally getting good, and I think Hollendorfer is understanding where to place this horse. 1-3 back at Lone Star in a grade 3, then went to the Cornhusker, had a ridiculous trip there. In fact, I got a story about this for just a second. If you printed your PPs early, the note for him in there is dueled far turn, comma faded. If you watch the race and if you look at the chart, he was 5 or 6 wide in that first turn. And I actually reached out to our buddy Bob Nastanovich, who does the chart for Prairie Meadows. And he said, yeah, I noted in the chart, but in the little short comment, I forgot to put how wide he was. So he actually updated it. If you go into Formulator now, it says 5.6 wide trip.
That's hilarious. Nastanovich, talk about a man for all seasons. Here we have a rock star, clocker, administrative guy, chart caller, apparently. Yeah. It's like he's got more jobs than me or Jonathan. I don't envy him, but kudos to him for updating that and making sure that bettors get the best information.
Seriously, so it was a crazy trip, completely excused. He had a late lead change. He actually ran on late to make up ground. It was a much better race than it looks on paper. And then last out in the Long Acres Mile, he made the classic early move into the hot pace. I mean, the backstretch move that he made was just insane. And he kind of set it up for a horse to come and sweep by him late. But he ran huge in running second. And, you know, no knock there. I think he's as good, if not better, than any of these horses in here. And you're going to get a square price on him. So he's my play.
All right, we'll let you move quickly on to the original point you were making, and then the Mike Hogan filibuster will end.
Okay, so Who's Out, number 11 for Jerry Hollendorfer, draws the outside. He'll get a good stocking trip with Mike Smith aboard. Last out, cross the line through the shared belief. I mean, he was in that race primarily, in my opinion, because this is Jim Rome, a Jim Rome-owned horse for Jerry Hollendorfer in the first running of a race named after the best racehorse he's ever owned. Of course, they were going to enter him in the shared belief. He was prominent early. He faded. Mike Smith just stopped on him. He was wide on the third. Draw a line through it. He wants to be sprinting. He's cutting back to a sprint. His best sibling is Bourbon Courage, who's better as a sprinter. He gets a nice cutback. He'll get a great trip. If he didn't have that last race on there to muddy his form, he'd be at least half the price. I'm not expecting 12-1 of the morning line, but I would take 6-1 happily. Who's out?
All right. Now, all you Jonathan Kinchin fans wondering, Pete, why don't you let JK talk? Don't worry. When we get up to the 11th race, we're just going to hand it off to him, and he's just going to riff. So the JK fans will get their fix. But before we get to that, I do want to know, Jonathan, do you have any thoughts or picks regarding the Gallant Bob on Saturday?
Yeah. I'm challenging Mike now to a side bet challenge, a West Coast side bet challenge. The winner gets to choose the other person's Twitter picture for Twitter picture for a day. So I am coming at you with Richie Baltus and Navy M.
Okay.
And that's my head-to-head matchup challenge of the day.
That's
very
fair.
Simple. The rail has – and don't scream this too loud. I'm going to whisper a little bit. The rail was dead the entire meet at Del Mar, and this horse was buried inside speed on the inside. He's coming back. He gets Banjo. It's my nickname for Bejarano. Navy him for me with Richie Baltus. Hopefully the people in Pennsylvania don't know who he is.
Something I'll say about Banjo. You know what his record is at Parks? He's 3-for-6 with 2 seconds. So he's on Cyrus Alexandra the race before. I can't knock you for that one. The only other thing I'll say about who's out, go to the race 3 back. Who'd he beat?
Is that a fair rhetorical enough question?
No. Who'd he beat?
Jazzy Times?
Yeah, Jazzy Times. The Bob Baffert horse, who he liked better than Dreyfong going into the King's Bishop, but scratched from that race. Look, this is a horse that has some talent. I think he's going to be good. I'll take him against your claimer.
All right, we'll have the that's dangerous words talking about Richie Baltus claims, but we'll let that play out on the racetrack. Jonathan, I take it from your pick, though, that you did – I was originally going to try to see if you agreed with the L.A. boys West Coast bias comments. I wasn't really feeling like getting into the fray. I was just curious if we had you to defend East Coast dirt horses at all. Doesn't sound like it.
Oh, no. I think this is an – I think I'm really on to what Mike – I like that horse for Mike, the who's out. I mean, I think it's an exact situation. I think those two have a really good shot of running 1-2 here. But at the same time, I got to take the horse who is coming off of a dead rail.
I'm curious who you're going to each pick for one another's avatars. Is that stated before the bet, or is it like a surprise?
Oh, it can be a surprise, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a picture of me saying that I love Jonathan Kinchin.
Jonathan just dropped this on me on the air, so I had no idea. I mean, I'm just like, my brain is swirling thinking about the different possibilities.
I like it. I could see it. We could recycle Jonathan Kinchin wearing the Baffert wig. There's a lot of opportunities here for
there's that bathrobe shot.
Oh, please don't bring that one back. That was, you know, of all the annoying bath photos I've seen on Twitter and horse racing Twitter, I think that one took the cake.
Yeah.
But all right, let's move on to the Cotillion. It's a grade one. Jonathan, we'll keep it with you. What a showdown this race is. What are we thinking? What's going to happen? Is this going to be Songbird just increasing her resume, or is there a chance there might be a little bit of bloom off the rose before the Breeders' Cup?
I'm sorry. I don't have a handicapping opinion here. I am just hoping that she wins so that I can make money on Beholder. If she loses, it ruins my plan. So I have to take all of my mental energy and juju and put it in her direction. I mean, you can try to get cute and take something else here, but I just think it's one of those hoping. You're hoping for something different to happen. She's, I guess, Catherine Sophia is the only shot at beating her. But if you go back to the Oaks and Songbird runs there, she wins by 4, doesn't she? So I don't know. I'm just going to be rooting for Songbird.
I was seeing it the same way as you. I mean, I understand there's some wise guy sentiment for Catherine Sophia, and that isn't crazy, but I think we're going to see a better Songbird today cutting back to a distance I think she'll prefer. And, you know, I'm not saying it necessarily as a bet, but I do think that you'll be okay in your hopes for the Breeders' Cup. Mike, any dissenting opinion here?
So Jerry Hollendorfer, lifetime at Park/Philly Park, he's 0-for-11 with 5 seconds, and one of those seconds was blind luck at 3-to-5 in the Cotillion in 2010 against Hava de Grace. I think, here's my prediction, he leaves on Saturday, goes in 0-for-11, he leaves 3-for-14. Cold pick 3 for Jerry Hollendorfer from races 8 through 10.
Bold. Bold statements. I like it. Now, I guess part of the case for Catherine Sophia is the home field advantage angle. I mean, here you have a filly who's been training super well, couldn't know the track any better, reuniting with Castellano. Does any of that factor into a possible reason why this isn't going to go the way that the three of us are thinking? Jonathan, do you give any credit to that home field advantage angle?
I mean, obviously the connections want to win it. The trainer wants to win it for the connections. I mean, I get all of that stuff, but you know, I wake up every day and want to be a millionaire and I'm still not one. So it doesn't make the biggest difference in the world, but I get it and I respect it. And it would give me a little bit more confidence when I hit click or I handed the money to the teller, but it's not going to make the difference.
How about Karina Mie in here, Mike? I mean, for me, I always talk about how much I love Mott with a target. It seemed like he had a very different target when he came back with Karina Mie in the ballerina, and that didn't work. So now they're heading back to here. It doesn't feel like a Bill Mott spot to me. What do you think?
Well, this is a bit Bill Mott angle, isn't it? You know, I actually tweeted out about this. Bill Mott going sprinter out on dirt in graded stakes. He does really well, and you take a look at the two mile wins or mile and a 16th and mile wins from Karina Mia on her resume. She was doing that in both of them. You know, so look, I could see it, but I just frankly think Songbird is much better than these. You know, I mean, I
would not be wasting.
I know. I mean, look, I try and take a shot against a short price favorite anytime I can. And I could see a world in which she loses, but I think the vast majority of times, if they ran this race a bunch of times, Songbird wins 60, 70, 80% of them.
So, Jonathan, you'll have to break the tie. I mean, I take Mike's point about Mott's sprinter route, but I think that those other sprinter route spots, especially the Karina Mia ones, made a lot more sense and were a bit more logical, and I consider them training angles. For me, I consider this almost like a negative to see her back in here against this group. Just talking about Karina Mia alone, do you see this as sort of a positive trainer move for Mott the way Mike is seeing it, or are you seeing what I'm saying about it maybe being a little bit more negative?
Do you have an opinion?
That's an answer.
I don't know if it's negative or positive. I'm going to say what I think, and then at the end I'll be able to say which one I think it is. I think that what's the point of waiting for the Raven Run at Keeneland or whatever it is, the 7-furlong Philly sprint race, to set her up for the Philly and Mare sprint at Santa Anita? Why not just run her in this spot for more money against restricted, you know, against 3-year-olds, and then just cut her back again? I thought Rosario moved way too early last time in the ballerina. I don't think that was really a negative about her ability to sprint. And I think that this is just a race that, like, let's just run her in this spot, and then we'll cut her back for the Breeders' Cup if that's the necessary next step.
That's an interesting point. I want to watch that tape with that your thought about Rosario in mind. For me, at the top of the lane, I thought Karina Mia was going to win for absolute fun. And I don't like to bet horses the next time when I have that feeling that a horse is in a great position to win and they flatten out. I feel like in my horse playing career, I've done better fading those horses the next time than excusing them. What were you going to say, Mike?
I'll say this for the race is called the Cotillion, but for Karina Mia, this race might as well be called the Test, because I think what they're trying to figure out here is where does she fit on Breeders' Cup Day? And if she runs really well against the top filly in her division, who's going to be favorite or co-favorite in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, if she, regardless of whether she wins or not, if she runs well tomorrow against Songbird, they move forward and go to the Distaff. If she doesn't, they go back as a fallback to the Philly and Mare Sprint. That's what I think.
All right. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. We didn't talk about Land Over Sea for a minute. Who I was thinking, you know, is that a horse to think about for trying to get in your bottom up key in your trifecta and super? But I don't know. It might just be that the top three are so good that they just do their thing. Fascinating race to take a look at under any circumstances, but not as fascinating, in my opinion, as the 11th race at Parks, the Pennsylvania Derby. As promised, we're just going to hand it to Jonathan for this one and let him go for a while.
Exaggerator for fun.
What?
The rail's always dead at Parks. He's about to get a massive setup. They're going to try to rate Nyquist, which I think is it could work. And if it works and Nyquist wins at 5-2, then, you know, great. But I think that they're going to fly in front. Awesome. Slough wants to front. Summer Revolution wants to be forward. Connect tried to rate last time. That didn't go well. Cupid's a maniac speed horse that obviously they've been pointing to get him out of the gate. hit it once more once Speedy's drawn way outside. I mean, they're going to fly.
Breaking news, folks. Breaking news. Apparently, it's just been announced that the Pennsylvania Derby is a one-turn race this year.
No. Hey, Eric Bielek said it best. One-turn horses can win two-turn races when they get one-turn setups. And that's exactly what he's going to get. They're going to fly. He's going to come sweeping on the outside on the good part of the track while there's other horses swimming down on the inside, and he's going to win for fun. Then they're going to run him in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then I'll be against him again, and then he'll win the Malibu in December.
In the 15th, this will be the 15th start of Exaggerator's career, Jonathan. Is this the first time you've been on his side?
Let me see. Yes. No, I might have used him a little bit in some of his earlier. Oh, you know what? Saratoga Special, a one-turn race, 6.5. He went off at 9-2 that day. I won a tournament with him. I did. But that, other than that, no, I've kind of been off of him forever. I still feel the same way I feel about him. But in handicapping and in betting and in horse racing, like, you can't continuously bang your head against the wall because of your not so great opinion. I think that the horse is he's going to be better as a one-turn horse, but he's going to get a huge setup today on the good part of the track, and I think he's going to win.
One of my favorite tweets ever, Jonathan, in amongst our little group of horse racing Twitter folks who chatter back and forth, was Nick Tamaro with you about Exaggerator, where at some point you made some tweet about him being a one-turn horse and spelled it Exaggerator, and Nick responded, Jonathan, if you're going to continue to spout your ridiculous opinion about this horse, please at least spell his name correctly.
I know. I told him, I was like, I got auto-corrected. Leave it to Nick. Nick's the guy in our group text. When you say something he doesn't like, if you spell there, you know, T-H-E-R-E instead of E-I-R or whatever, he lets you have it. So he's selective. He's selective with his grammar whenever you disagree with him.
Mike Hogan, I feel bad. I feel like we've probably stolen your thunder on this race, given what I know your opinion about Exaggerator be. But it's only fair. We let you go on for a while before. So what do you have to add? I can only predict that you're going to be all over Exaggerator in this spot.
I'm speechless.
He got up early this morning. He's got a bullet notes.
I got all these charts, diagrams,
PowerPoint presentations. I would have bet the world Jonathan was against Exaggerator coming in. Yeah. I mean, he makes excellent points, but my hope there was for him to pick some speed of the speed horse, and then for Mike to be able to make a proclamation about how he wants it to be bone dry and bet his whole bank on Exaggerator. But my plan as a host failed miserably. But perhaps, Mike, you can pull us out of the fire with some interesting thoughts on this PA Derby.
I thought this was going to be count pointer count, you know, where we just sit here going back and forth. Well, this is why your horse stinks. Well, this is, you know, Jonathan made the case. I mean, Exaggerator, you know, sure, he might like a wet track more than some of the other horses, but I don't think all of his wins are because of wet tracks. I think his wins were he got the setups, and Kent moved at the right time in those races. Kent moved at the wrong time, way too early in both the Belmont and the Travers. And in the Travers, it looks like, if you look at his past performance from the Travers, 11th beaten 33 lengths, never closer than 8th. Eight and a quarter lengths from the lead. What he did there, Kent tried the same move that he did in the Haskell, which is kind of a bit of a premature move. And that move works when you've got speed that comes back. And Arrogate did not come back to the field that day. In fact, he quickened. So that kind of move never, ever works in the Travers.
It wasn't just Arrogate who humiliated him in the Travers. I mean, this was it was basically eased in the race. Don't either of you guys have at least a little bit of trouble betting a horse off an eased effort coming back after been a pretty enervating campaign? That doesn't give either of you any pause?
Nope, not at all.
No, and he worked well at Churchill.
Let me tell you why. His splits, if you do the incremental splits, his splits for this race, okay, he went slower in the Travers for the first quarter than any other race of his career, including the Kentucky Derby, including the Belmont.
And you don't think that could be a sign of tailing off?
No, because here's the thing. Kent let him go 25.88 in the opening quarter. Then the second quarter, 23.37. Then the third quarter, 23.18. He ran nearly a second faster in the third quarter than Arrogate's third quarter. Okay? That is a recipe for a horse that's going to get eased in the stretch. And as soon as he realized he had nothing, what's the point? I mean, he's eighth. What is he going to get? Fifth?
Especially a one-turn horse running in a 10-furlong race.
Against a real racehorse, right?
Oh, my gosh.
There's no arrogates in this spot.
Well, what else are we thinking in terms of filling out the exotics here? Mike, or are you just going to focus all your play on Exaggerator on top?
No, for me, it's Exaggerator and Gunrunner together, using both of those two on top, trying to get both Cupid and Nyquist out of the tries and supers. And I'll be dabbling with some Summer Revolution and Connect and maybe some of the other bigger prices underneath just to try and create value, because I think the value is getting Nyquist and Cupid off the board. And I think it's entirely possible that happens.
Summer Revolution surprises me. I would think he'd be on the short list of horses to get burned out and run out. What is it you like about him?
Well, you know, it's more just value and potential upside. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the race sets up that well for him, but we certainly haven't seen him at two turns, and we haven't seen him going a route of ground, and maybe he's just a freak. So at a nice price, if I can help him round out the try and super, you know, he certainly adds more value than some other horses.
I think if he's a freak, he hits the board, at least in the King's Bishop. Jonathan, what do you think about that? You had another comment, it sounded like, but if you don't remember what that was, just who are you looking at in terms of filling out the exotics underneath?
Yeah, no, I'm going to use Sunny Ridge for sure underneath. We talked about the home field advantage with Jason Service. So I definitely want a little Sunny Ridge underneath. I thought he ran well in the Haskell, and I thought he was the kind of the key bomb horse in that race. And I think that he could get a similar setup here with it kind of falling apart in front of him, drawn outside. The horse I'm kind of against here and I wanted to pick was Gunrunner. I if you watch the NBC broadcast of the Travers, he looked loaded like a winner buried down on the inside when they had that overhead view on the far turn, and he was just empty and couldn't get by American Freedom late, and so that was a really discouraging performance for me, and one that I can't bet the horse off of.
That's interesting, because from speed figure terms, you wouldn't be crazy to think you could see another step forward, but that's a good point. Sometimes you have to just go with your own subjective opinion of what you think a horse is going to do versus what they end up doing. So that's interesting.
I got a question for you guys about Sunny Ridge. I mean, he's enough of a price that it makes sense trying to get into the exotics. But here's my concern. This is a horse who has run once since March. And sure, he ran pretty well in the Haskell. But 6 weeks before he worked again, and he's only had one work since the Haskell, which was, you know, what, 2 months ago almost? So is there something – I'm not saying he's unsound, but I'm just wondering if he's missed some training time and he's maybe not going to be primed here.
I don't know this as fact, but here's what I – this is my answer to your question is that in the Mid-Atlantic region – there's so many tracks and training facilities and everything is so close to each other. The idea that he's been working somewhere and just been missed on the tab is not outside the realm of possibility to me.
Might be worth paying close attention to the articles probably in DRF right now. See if there's any specific mention of Sunny Ridge. It'd be good to get a little bit of extra information. Speaking of places where horses train that we don't have much information from, what have we heard about Nyquist and how he's been working at San Luis Rey, this impressive-looking string of mile workouts? Of course, famously, they'd given him some time, said he needed to grow into his frame. He was doing some swimming. What are we hearing, if anything, about where Nyquist is at?
You know, it looks like a typical Doug O'Neill situation we've talked about in the past, about how he's, you know, he gallops the heck out of his horses. And, I'm not even sure if he's actually working them a mile, but if he's just two-minute licking them or a little bit faster than that, the clockers are picking it up on the clock and giving him a time. So, you know, look, we talked about it earlier this summer when that first came out that, you know, Pete and I were shocked the first time that we got to see Uncle Mo, how big he was. And I've heard from a couple of people of how he grew late and how he was kind of a late developer. And that's kind of a little bit ironic considering how good he was as a young horse. But maybe that's what's going on with Nyquist. Doug admitted that it was all his fault in the Preakness with Mario being rushed up and going to the front. And so maybe they'll take him back a little bit. I mean, he makes sense to me, but he's not. Let me see one more and maybe I'll get excited about him in his next race.
Anything to add to that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about the works other than what I see on, the paper here, which is after the Haskell, it seems like they were working him slowly, a mile in 145 and four, the next work in 141 and one, then 139 and four, then 138 and one. So it seems like they're trying to tighten the screws. I do know that Doug not only took the responsibility for the loss in the Preakness, but the same for the Haskell. And he told Mario, look, you're on the inside. Don't give up the rail. I heard that the rail is always golden at Monmouth. So don't give up the rail, no matter what happens. And so that's what happened. He didn't give up the rail and he finished fourth. And now I know the plan is to sit back with him. I don't know if that's take back or just naturally let the other horses go out ahead of him. But just the way he's kind of turned from the BC Juvenile, which is the reason why they think he can pass horses. But since that race, he just seems like a horse that doesn't want to settle. He wants to go to the lead. And with a change of tactics at a short price against a field that's pretty decent with a lot of other early speed, he's the kind I look to play against.
We have these Chad Brown long shots in here. Any quick thoughts on them and their chances? It does seem like a race where it might be worth trying to get a little bit of cute, in my opinion. Any help from Chad Brown here, do we think, JK?
I think one of them is very likely to be involved at some point in the race and to get a piece. It's just, but I don't know which one it is. I don't think my man Sam is very good,
right.
So I guess I'm going to by default say that it's Connect. But I know they've always liked Connect, and a horse like Connect at 12-1 is one that I would definitely not ignore. And in fact, he's probably the type of horse that, we've all been in these tournament scenarios where you're like, oh, I like Exaggerator, but he can't get me home. Connect would be the horse that I would take.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would use him underneath and maybe even really defensively on top just in case he's good enough. I think he's the better of the two. Even though the race sets up better for my man Sam, I think Connect is rateable. And I think if you look at the jockey bookings, you'll see which one Chad thinks is better.
All right. We're going to cut the show a little bit short today just because I'm a little bit underwater with dealing with a few things. But I do want to give us a chance at least to go around for some final thoughts. I've got one myself. I'll do mine first so you guys can think of yours. A race that should be on your radar this weekend. We've got this jackpot bet paying off at Arlington on Saturday. So in the midst of looking at all these stakes races, there's some Philly five dime claimers you might want to look at for the super high five in the last at Arlington. I've printed out the PPs. I haven't started looking yet, but anytime they've got to give money away, opportunity to turn it into, if not a positive expectation situation, something at least pretty darn close. So don't sleep on the Arlington Super High Five carryover on Saturday. Mike, some closing thoughts.
Oh, boy. We didn't get a chance to talk about it. Maybe on Tuesday we can talk a little bit about the change in the Del Mar Pick 6 and how they're taking a portion of what they pay out in the consolations and putting half of it into a jackpot-type carryover situation.
Modified rainbow format?
Modified rainbow. No other changes to the takeout. No other change to the minimum. No other change to what gets paid out to those that have 6 of 6. But it'd be an interesting discussion point.
Let's think about it over the weekend.
We'll
yap about that on Tuesday. If folks want to hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts about the Del Mar carryover, Mike Hogan has posted a poll.
I put out a poll earlier today that runs for 3 days. So chime in.
We'll talk about that on Tuesday. JK, final thoughts.
Yeah, same lane as Mike. I don't want to be hypocritical because we always ask for our industry to do new things and try new stuff and to not kind of just say, oh, this is what we've always done. So, but at the same time, I'm not sure if I'm crazy about all of that money being tied up for so long and it being such a a target that's going to be tough for people to reach with that high minimum. So we'll see. I'm not even sure. It just kind of came to my attention yesterday, and I'm kind of glad we didn't talk about it today because I haven't digested it as much as I want to. So Tuesday it'll be a good target for us to have.
I like it. Some other interesting Twitter questions have come in. If you have questions you'd like us to address on the show, feel free to hit us up at podcast@drf.com. You can find us on Twitter. Mike, which is your best Twitter handle these days?
Well, you know, I'm still doing both DRF Formulator and DRF Hogan. DRF Hogan tends to be more me, so I'll put out my opinions about races, what I think about things. It's a little more off the cuff and stuff. The DRF Formulator one is if you have issues with your account, you have questions about Formulator, I'll put it out as more like here's angles, plays, you know, strictly from Formulator. I'll do that, but go ahead and follow both.
There you go. Jonathan can be found at @UTBigHair. I, of course, am at @LoomsBoldly. And that's it for today's slightly abbreviated show, but I think we covered a lot of good ground. And believe me, I think in the next few weeks we're going to be making up for it with some longer shows as we approach the Breeders' Cup. We're going to hopefully have some news on that as soon as the end of next week. Godspeed if you're playing this weekend. And most important of all, I hope you win all your photos.